Now, Western Buddhists can certainly learn from all this. As a living religion, Buddhism in this country is very recent, in fact, very, very recent. At first, we just had a bit of the Theravada, then a little Mahayana was added, including Zen, at least book Zen, mouth Zen. I don't know about any other kind. And more recently, we've come to know something about Tibetan Buddhism, including, of course, a little bit of the Tantra, about which everybody seems very interested and very curious. This word Tantra seems to draw people almost as much as the word Zen. But I think it's already become obvious, from all that we can see, that English Buddhism at least, one can't speak for that of America, English Buddhism at least will not be confined to any one of these traditions. As I said earlier, it won't be exclusively Theravadin or Mahayana or Zen or anything else. It'll be a synthesis of them all, but not just a jumble. And from Tibetan Buddhism, we in this country can learn how to achieve this synthesis of all these different elements in the total Buddhist tradition. And obviously, such a synthesis will not be achieved without mutual respect and mutual tolerance. And this, too, we can learn. Now, even in the West, we can't possibly hope all of us to see Buddhism in exactly the same way. I'll see it in one way, somebody else will see it in another way, and a third person in a third way. And we just have to accept this fact and work together nevertheless, reconciling all differences ultimately in the one ideal, the one objective which we all accept, which is Buddhahood or enlightenment. So if we can do this, if we can in this respect follow, however hesitatingly, in the footsteps of the Tibetans who have achieved in the past this very glorious, this magnificent, this very rich synthesis of the total Buddhist tradition, then English Buddhism, though it may not be very big, though it may be confined to comparatively few people, will at least be itself a rich, indeed a many splendid thing. Now we can learn several other things from Tibetan Buddhism, apart from those I've mentioned. We can learn depth and sincerity. Tibetan Buddhists are remarkably sincere, in the full sense of that much abused word, sincere in their approach to their religion. They really do believe in it. And this has to be seen to be believed. And we can also learn from them thoroughness. They do everything very, very thoroughly. It's very difficult to get a Tibetan to commit himself. If you ask a Tibetan, will you do this? Or will you help in such and such way? He agrees very slowly and very reluctantly. He'll go through every step of it with you. Right, first I've got to do this, yes, and then I've got to do that, yes, then something else, then something else. He'll understand fully. He'll go into it in detail, and then he'll commit himself, and then he'll say yes. And when he's said yes, once he's said yes, well, you can rely upon him then. He is very thorough, and he is very reliable. And we can also learn strenuousness. The Tibetans take their religion very strenuously. I've often heard Tibetans say, there's no religion without difficulty, or no religious life without difficulty. And they tend to think that if any religious practice is easy, it can't be really and truly religion. They think that if it's real religion, it's difficult. They think there's no easy way around, no shortcut. So they are prepared for hardship and for sacrifice for the sake of their religion. And this is one of the lessons which we learned, I hope we all remember this, from how Buddhism came to Tibet. In the course of that talk, towards the end of that talk, we saw how King Yeshe U of Western Tibet literally sacrificed his life for the sake of the Dharma, sacrificed his life so that the Buddha's teaching might be revived in Tibet. So this too we can learn from Tibetan Buddhism.